The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 1 pound packages of juicy 80% lean Angus ground chuck for $3.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to this podcast, season 6, episode 41. My name is Tim Mitchell. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jonathan Kuline in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
We also have Jaime Lippis Jr. on the line in... Wait a minute. Sorry. We have birthday boy Jaime Lippis Jr. on the line in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
It's your birthday. It's your birthday. Da-na-na-na-na. It's your birthday.
What song is that?
Well, I don't want to get sued.
Sued? Oh, okay. We could do the Beatle one. I guess, you know, most of them are dead. They wouldn't know.
Yeah, they're not litigious.
No, not at all. Not like the Eagles. Uh-oh. Now we're going to get sued by the Eagles.
You did it. Then Don Henley's going to be at your door.
Yep. All right. So fact check time. So Dave Price, friend of the show, Dave Price on our team Slack, is the person we know that plays Fallout or has played Fallout. And he said that the show that is on currently on is pretty close to the era of Fallout 3. I did watch, I mentioned the other day, I was looking for the sort of, you know, the YouTube recaps of what's going on. And there's a whole bunch of like really long, hour long episodes where people talk about the whole Fallout thing, but basically Dave's got a good summation here that says that each game tells another story set in the Fallout world. So it's not like a continuous from one game to the next or one character that sort of flows through them all. This one, he says, sort of feels kind of where Fallout 5 would be, because there was like a Fallout 4 and it was like a redo, and then what they call New Vegas. And you'll see, if you watch the end credits, you'll see the New Vegas signs pop up. Those are the last two games that came out, and they were sort of one of the first open world games where you could just wander around. He says the best line in the whole series is from the ghoul, where he says, "The wasteland has got its own golden rule. Thou shalt get sidetracked by BS every time." And which, you know, it's similar to like most open world games where you can go and play poker for like 4 days, you know, and not, you know, go down some rabbit hole instead of following the storyline, right? So, yeah. And what else is, oh, and then I was talking about the cola. It's Nuka Cola, of course, is the popular soda game from the game. And bottle caps is the currency that people pay for things. And he said you'll see signs all over the towns that say caps only, or we pay in caps. And I don't know why bottle caps would be the currency. I thought, you know, the nuclear power plant things, I've got the name wrong. The fusion cores would be the most valuable thing on the planet. Anyway, that's it. That's my follow-up from Fallout. And then Annabella Wallace is the voice of Zara. We talked about Calypso last week, which was season 1, episode 2 of Short Treks, and she's also plays Zara in the show. And coming back to Fallout again, I was talking about the thing that they wear, the control center they wear on their wrists. It's called a Pip-Boy. I was close. I said it was a Pit-Boy, but apparently they're making them, and you can order them from IGN. They're like, I think, $199 US to get your own game-inspired Pip-Boy. And it's basically how they get all, it's like their sort of portable internet kind of thing, and they can open doors with them and stuff like that. So
Are these fully functional for the ones you can purchase?
Well, they're relatively fully functional. I think they have some of the screens that are replicated that you see in the game. But I've also seen online that there are 3D models you can print of them. And I was watching an interview with the actress who plays Lucy, and she was saying it's actually an iPhone that's inside the thing, because she kept breaking hers. You know, she kept dropping them. So, and she kept smashing the screens and stuff. But anyway, so... yeah, so you can make, there's a model out there you can make with an iPhone 5, I believe. But yeah, and it's got that sort of retro, you know, green screen kind of display on it. Anyway, and that's it. So we'll move over to the headlines, unless you guys have any fact check stuff. Guess you don't.
No, nothing. Nope. Nothing for me.
All right. Well, I got one headline here, and that is Rebel Moon 2 has broken Zack Snyder's own record for the worst rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It took 13 years for him to upend his Sucker Punch was the lowest rated movie by him, and he's now unpassed that one.
Yeah. I don't know. Is it surpassing, or is it like
supplanted?
Supplanting, yeah.
Yeah, so congratulations to Zack Snyder for yet another fabulous performance.
So what's the number?
I think it's 43.
I mean, it's not the worst one I've ever heard of, but
no,
that's pretty bad.
It's the worst for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it was 43. Let me just start the article here. Audience score of 46%, breaking the record held by 13 years by Sucker Punch at 47. So he's just won. He just got it under there. Just, you know, just about did it. I mean, it blows up real good, and I'll talk about it in my watch list. But you know, it's pretty. But yeah, kind of yeah. Who cares if you don't watch it? No love will be lost by anybody. All right, over to you, Jaime, for the.
Yeah, everything is getting a series nowadays, including Sega's old arcade game that I'm hoping folks remember, Golden Axe, getting a 10 episode animated series from Comedy Central. I don't know what that is in Canada, but it's where like South Park started, for example.
It'd probably be Paramount Plus here.
Yeah, Paramount Plus does have a bunch of that stuff. And then the weird relationship with HBO that also confuses me when it comes to South Park. But yes.
It's true. There's also that Twisted Metal thing I've seen on TV. I just haven't watched it yet. But
that should be on Peacock, or at least it is on Peacock here.
Yeah, it's on Paramount Plus here. We get some of the Paramount Plus has Peacock content on it for some reason.
Who knows?
So is this supposed to be a comedy?
That would seem to fit kind of more naturally, but I don't know how...
Like the game is... I mean, it's kind of a hyper version of sort of, you know, Conan. It's this muscly, you know, bodybuilder Conan type with a sword who sort of is walking, side-scrolling through this adventure, chopping people's heads off and stuff.
Oh, not Conan O'Brien. Conan the Barbarian. Okay,
Conan, yeah, no, I mean, I think Conan the Barbarian is probably more apt. Conan O'Brien would be a really good show. I'd watch that.
Mm-hmm. There actually is a new show called Conan O'Brien's Gotta Go, or Must Go.
I saw the clips of him on Hot Wings. I haven't watched the episode yet, but it was hilarious just watching the clips of him like turning bright colors.
Yeah, yeah. I listened to his podcast. Anyway, sorry, go ahead, homie.
Oh, I wonder what sort of line it'll blend. I wonder if it'll be kind of like, let's say like Lower Decks, you know, leans funnier, right? You've got the producer, Mike McMahon, and Joe Chandler from American Dad and Lower Decks, and the description here is so the three main characters, you guys were pretty spot on, right? So everybody remembers the battle dwarf. You've got the sort of Amazonian warrior lady. And then you have the barbarian who, despite his name being Axe Battler, is a barbarian who doesn't battle with an axe, according to this. So it's probably going to be, you know, I'm imagining Lower Deck style or Rick and Morty-ish style, you know, tries to be, or okay, maybe here's the best example. What about it being kind of like Dungeons and Dragons, the most recent one?
Oh, the Honor Among Thieves one?
Yeah. Honor Among Thieves, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, that could work.
Some drama, but a fair amount of comedy, you know, that sort of mix.
Yeah, I'd watch that. Well, it's strange that they feel the need to put these classic names to stuff like that, though. Like, you could just as easily just do something else, but everybody's got to grab an IP to do it, right?
Yeah. It's the easy way out, I guess, you know.
But as Jaime, as you pointed out in your introduction, like, if you weren't born, I'm going to say by the early 80s is probably the cutoff line. Like, you're not going to really remember much of Golden Axe. Not like it's a property that's ongoing. It kind of had its heyday in the 80s and 90s, and then that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing too about these franchises is, I mean, like, back in the day, people were just making games for the sake of making games. I don't know that they were they that well written story wise.
Most of them didn't have a story. They were just, you know, what do we put on this level? Okay, in this level, skeletons will attack you. On this next level, zombies will attack you. On this level, vampires will attack you.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, you decided how you want the kind of game you wanted to play by either like a car racing game or a first person shooter. And it wasn't until like Zelda and those kind of things where they had the open worlds, right?
Yeah. Even then, it really, those games were fewer and further between and sort of got better over time.
Yeah.
Yeah. This would be a side scrolling beat 'em up, quarter muncher. So a bunch of enemies, definitely some areas that would be just like extremely cheap, not in the money sort of way of like, oh my gosh, how are you supposed to know that like the thundering herd of beasts is going to eat some of your life and hit you? Totally unavoidable, unless you've already had that happen to you and you know to just run over to the corner or something. It would do that sort of thing. So I'm kind of wondering if the IP was relatively cheap to pick up, given y'all astutely pointing out like, wow, this is hitting like a particular sort of demographic if you're going off the IP itself. But otherwise, it also makes me think of that show, and I had to look it up, Crapopolis. It's vaguely swords and fantasy comedy kind of thing. So I wonder if that's another one that they might be sort of using for inspiration. That would be crap with a K if you're internet searching.
All right. I think you're next time, man.
Yeah. So we just talked about, you know, can you buy IP cheap? And some people are like, hey, in this AI-powered world, what if we just don't even buy IP? So this one is, so TCL, they make TVs. And I did not know that they have a streaming service called TCL TV Plus. That's quite the name there. And they're using generative AI to make a complete film, quote-unquote film, called Next Stop Paris, which, as this article from, who is this, Engadget, says, it's basically like those pretty formulaic movies you would see on the Hallmark Channel or Lifetime Movie Network. But if you watch the trailer, as pointed out by the Engadget folks, it's so bizarre that the characters just completely change their look, presumably because the AI props aren't going to be really consistent scene to scene to scene for what it's generating. It's really kind of bizarre. They're kind of Polar Express kind of off-putting in their dead eyes. And then it's kind of amusing watching just random stuff in the background move around as, you know, a lot of this AI-generated stuff is wont to do.
Right.
Creepy. Creepy.
Creepy.
Yeah. I hope they, like, make it free or something, because I kind of like watching dumpster fire stuff like this. Like, this is a historic occasion, right? Like, you know, the second or third of these is not going to be all that interesting. But I will tell people, like, I did actually watch
the penultimate one, or the,
well, no, yeah, I watched the Mario Lopez KFC vehicle, the Colonel Sanders movie, for lack of a better term. It was like 15 minutes long.
Well, there's a channel here, I don't know what channel it is, but it's Christmas every time I go by. You know, some buddies at a, you know, buying a tree and meets a girl, and it's just sort of one of those, you know, Hallmark kind of movies, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's probably the simple, honest guy. She's the big city gal who doesn't want to be there, probably has a boyfriend, but not necessarily, and ultimately ends up discovering mutual love for the all shucks, America's salt of the earth kind of thing.
I've assumed that the Hallmark Channel uses AI to write its scripts for a long time. I just didn't assume there was one person doing it, because that would be a really, really quick job.
Yeah, they must have like a random generator for their cards as well.
Jaime, do you remember the episode of South Park where they have the manatees picking Family Guy scripts?
Oh, that's right. They were like in a big tank.
They're in a big tank, and they literally are like pulling all the non sequiturs, all the little asides. And they were like, "What if Gary Coleman?"
Yep.
All right, well, I'm up. This week we saw a neat new trailer. We got the first ever Marvel Studios Red Band trailer for one of their movies, which is a pretty big deal because we are getting our first R-rated Marvel Studios movie coming this summer as the only Marvel movie coming out this year, Deadpool and Wolverine. So we'd already seen one teaser came out around the Super Bowl, got a little bit of a glimpse, but this one a little more teasery, a little more Easter eggy. You got to see a little bit of the some of the supporting characters and a little more interaction between Hugh Jackman's Wolverine and Ryan Reynolds's Deadpool. And there were a lot of F-bombs in there, so be warned, this is not one for the kiddies. You know, there's a very famous utterance at the end of this trailer that is an ear catcher, but yeah, I thought this was pretty tantalizing, particularly some of the sort of, you know, we saw a few faces from the past of the X-Men franchises, some characters of whom are dead, and some characters who in other dimensions are clearly dead, including a very creepy looking version of Giant Man, Ant-Man's skull that they're all living in. Mm-hmm. At first, it looks like a helmet, but if you watch it slowly, you can see that there's actually a skull inside the helmet, which is really gross. What'd you guys take away from this trailer?
Well, I saw quite a few things, and it may have been conflated with the other trailer we saw before, and maybe some of the reviews I saw about the trailer, that the TVA is involved. So, like, when you said this is a version of Wolverine, or maybe a couple of versions of Wolverine, this isn't what we think of as the main Wolverine character, because that person we saw his end of life with Patrick Stewart and all that in the Logan movie, right?
Yeah. So,
but it was funny. There's a lot of crossover. Like they're playing with some of the conventions and tropes that have been in the other ones. Like, for instance, I think there's a scene there. Somebody explained that it's like the end of Deadpool 2, but it's kind of like Deadpool comes back in and takes over the scene, kind of thing.
Yeah.
It looks pretty interesting. I love the line at the very beginning where they're in the bar and you know, the guy's refusing to serve Wolverine, and Deadpool shows up and he goes, "Listen, lady, I haven't got time," right? Or not interested. That's the way he says that to Deadpool is funny, but yeah. And there's sort of, you know, I think it's a different, I don't know if this is the same, like I said, same universe that our Deadpool comes from, but you know, because there's a relationship change between him and his friends, right? So.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say how they're going to sort of wrap this. I assume it's the same sort of Deadpool in his universe who is then, you know, roped into a TVA kind of boondoggle, as we've seen this sort of mirror universe, infinite timelines kind of stuff over a bunch of the different Marvel properties over the last little while. And in this one, he realizes he needs a Wolverine. And so they find a Wolverine, just like they found different versions of Doctor Strange in the Doctor Strange movie, or they found different versions of the Scarlet Witch in the Doctor Strange movie and stuff. So, yeah, I think there's ways to do it that are not completely incongruous. And really what matters is we get to see Hugh Jackman in a quote unquote real Marvel movie, a Marvel Studios movie. So,
oh, this is the first time X-Men has done.
This will be I mean, we saw Patrick Stewart in, when we saw the Doctor Strange movie, Patrick Stewart's in there as Professor X, but again, it's from like an alternate timeline. It's not necessarily that, you know, Professor X, I would hope not, considering what fate becomes him in that movie, but yeah, I think it's it'll be interesting to see how they weave all this together to both make an entertaining movie and also try and bring some of this stuff back around. But apparently it's going to get really, really, really absorbent. They're going to bring in, you know, there's talk that Jennifer Garner's Elektra will show up at some point. There's talk that, like, they're going to rope in a bunch of the other Fox Marvel products into this, so that, you know, they just sort of wrap their arms around everything that's happened before as this was an alternate universe. So,
right.
Jaime, what'd you think?
I think it looks really, really fun. They obviously have done a pretty good job with the Hugh Jackman and Wolverine's feeling like the Wolverine character that we know and love from the trailers, and poking, you know, fun at the fourth wall directly there at the end, where the old lady's like, oh, we should do some cocaine. He's like, no, like Kevin Feige, that's like the one thing he said not to. Yeah. Oh, what about Bolivian marching powder? No, they know all the terms. They know all the slang. Can't get away with that. It's fun to see them, you know, play with that sort of thing. Keeping, you know, an interesting blend here, right, of the largely much more family-friendly MCU with the very much not family-friendly Deadpool character.
Yeah.
And that's Leslie Uggams too, right?
Yep.
She's also in Fallout. Cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Next up, saw this today. This was interesting. So we know that they're sort of quasi-rebooting Harry Potter, that HBO is working on a Harry Potter television series right now that is going to do sort of more in-depth book-like versions of the Harry Potter story. And apparently the two different versions, the North American and British versions of the audiobooks, aren't good enough. They're going to do a full audio play version of it with 100 different cast members playing different parts and sound effects and the whole nine yards. Very similar to the one that they did with the Sandman and sort of, you know, a much more sort of, yeah, like an old time radio play where it's sort of, you know, them all playing different characters and you know, really making a sort of production out of it. This is going to be coming to Audible, and it's coming exclusively to Audible. So, you know, if there was people out there who are still Harry Potter fans, then, yeah, it's a pretty big undertaking, and sounds like it could be quite well done.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've made my feelings about J.K. Rowling known on this, so I won't go too far into it, but I'm going to say pass for me.
But it's kind of like, it's funny though that you say that, because I remember George Lucas saying that there were three, maybe six movies, and now there's what, 11 or 12? And then J.K. Rowling, by the same token, said she was only going to ever do the movies and the books, and now she keeps rolling out these new properties, like, you know, or whoever owns her rights or whatever.
Yeah, no, I believe she owns the rights. I don't think they can do stuff without her, but I don't know. Maybe the crick is running more dry with so many people turning their backs on her over the last couple of years. Yes. So
poor girl.
Yeah, she has my deep sympathy. Oh, no, wait, not at all in any way, shape, or form. Okay, and last up, I was excited by this. I saw this news this week that they're bringing the Lord of the Rings movies back into theaters. They're not only are they bringing them to theaters, but they're bringing the extended versions to theaters. So obviously it's a long sit, but the cool part is that, you know, obviously those versions were only for a home release. They didn't actually put those in the theaters. They just put in the theatrical releases. These ones are the full, you know, all the bells and whistles, which is cool, except that they're only doing that in America and Canada can go screw itself. So, yeah, we don't get that. I looked it up to see if there was any local theaters participating, and it basically said, how do you feel about driving to upstate New York? So,
right.
Unless we went across the border and go watch it there.
How many hours is that now? Like, how many hours long is the whole three movie?
I believe thing? It's more than 12 when you have the extended editions. And I don't think they're doing them. I don't know if it's basically back to back to back. I don't think you have to marathon them. I think they're showing them over the course of a bit of time where you can, you know, go one day, go the next day, go the next day. But that, of course, assumes you don't have to drive to the United States, cross the border, do all that stuff, and then go, because that would be a lot of time to go back and forth.
Well, I know that the Hobbit trilogy has been playing over and over and over again on TV on the holidays, but hasn't the Lord of the Rings also been playing over and over and over again? Like, haven't people seen it if they're going to see it?
I mean, the theaters, though.
That's the thing. Like, you've never been able to see these versions of these films in 4K in the theater.
Right, right.
So that's the enticement. Like, I don't know. I mean, I like the movies. I enjoyed them at the time. I enjoy them now. But I don't know. I guess maybe we'll ask Jaime, since he could conveniently go to his neighborhood theater and watch these. Would you be enticed to see these versions of these films in the theater?
You know, that's kind of interesting. I was looking, they're on the 8th, 9th, and 10th of June, so they have them on different days, showings of one, then showings of the other, and showings of the other, one of the movies per day. But they're like putting them in a bunch of theaters here. Like, I wouldn't have to go very far to see any of these. So, I mean, maybe, you know, if you were going to introduce somebody to to the fandom. Like, this is what you've missed by seeing it on the tiny screen. It's the Star Wars special edition sort of play. Mm-hmm. You only saw it on VHS on your TV. Now you get to see it in the theaters. I could also see, you know, we've got Comic-Cons and stuff here, so fans might, you know, dress up and go do that thing. Maybe. I guess we'll find out.
And it's part of a trend. I mean, I think we've talked about it over the last few weeks. So on May the 3rd, Phantom Menace is coming back to the theaters. So you can go see that. They've announced that the Spider-Man movies, all of the Spider-Man movies, including like all the Tobey Maguires, all the Andrew Garfields, and of course, the Tom Hollands are all coming back into the theaters this summer. It seems like there's a real trend. I saw Ridley Scott's Aliens coming back. Like, there's a lot of opportunities to see classic films on big screens. And we talked about, I think that's previously, Tim, about, you know, I think this is what theaters are going to have to do, is give you a chance to see great movies in the best possible way in order to keep people coming to the theaters, because they're just not producing A, a lot of movies, and B, a lot of movies that are going to entice people to the theater. Going to the back catalog is probably a smart idea. But it also depends. Like, I think you and I might have talked about it. If you're going to show me any of these movies, I want to see them in the best possible situation and, like, put them in the Ultra AVX or IMAX or whatever is sort of possible.
Or 3D or whatever, yeah.
Put them in, like, the little side theater that fits, like, 40 people. Like, that's really not a better experience than I'm going to get sitting on my sofa at home, where I can pause the four-hour movie and go get a drink or go to the bathroom. If I'm going to go to the theater, I want the best experience. I don't want, you know, to be shunted off to theater 18 of 20 and you know, tell me that that's the great Owen theater experience. It's not. It's just not.
Yeah.
Yeah. The question I have is, are they going to make some sort of inappropriate cover for the commemorative popcorn tub?
I think,
you mean, like, so you can reenact scenes or whatever.
Yeah, like what would you choose? Would it be a Mount Doom shape? You know, when it still kind of looks like a big hole. I mean, it's a big volcano, people. You know, what do you expect?
Yeah, it's true.
I think, in the spirit of the sandworm bucket that looks kind of disgusting, I think I would go with, you know, the part in Return of the King with the mouth of Sauron, the creepy guy who speaks for Sauron, whose lips have all melted away because he speaks such vile things. Like, just like that, but you have to put your hand into his mouth to feed or something.
Yeah, yeah. I'll wait for the Return of the Jedi Sarlacc pit bucket.
Popcorn's back on the menu, boys.
All right. Well, we're at the main part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek related, and this time around it is Star Trek Discovery Season 5, Episode 5, Mirrors. Gee, I wonder what that's about. And should we do our elevator pitches?
Sure.
I've got one.
Bring it.
But I have to sing it.
Oh, go for it.
Love, exciting and new. Come aboard. We're expecting you.
Yeah, that's pretty close.
Not my favorite episode of Star Trek. But it's funny because I watched it and then I flipped over to YouTube for some reason and I saw Patrick Stewart on Saturday Night Live doing the Star Trek love.
Yeah, crossover. Yeah, it's a classic. Yeah.
But yeah, the whole middle of the, we'll talk about it in our review, I guess, but the whole middle section was like, really? This is the best you can do? Anyway.
I mean, what you got?
Speaking of Hallmark, yeah.
Yeah, I went with Michael and Booker discover that you never know what's going to happen when you enter the burn hole.
Jeez. That's keeping really close to the line there, Jaime. Good job.
Okay, once I heard, like, oh, there's like a burn remnant, I'm like, I got it. I already know. I don't even need to watch the rest of the episode. I've already got the killer line right here.
Well, I went with the more cynical elevator pitch, which was one producer says to the other, hey, what can we use for a set this week that's cheap and nearby?
Yeah, and it's already built and ready, like, ready to go. Oh, yeah. And already in Toronto.
Let's just turn the lights down, put some dirt on the studio for Strange New Worlds. And hey, we've got a set we can work with. Yeah, that to me, that just felt like a real, you know, I get it, but it was a pretty cheap way to go at it.
Yep.
Yeah.
We only got a limited budget in this final year of Star Trek Discovery.
So, Tim, you didn't love the Maul and Locke, a love story?
No.
What essentially this was. It was mirrors. It was the mirror of the relationship between Burnham and Book, of course, and the one between Maul and Locke.
And Green Eyes. Yeah, Green Eyes and Maul. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Longer hair wig, you know.
Yeah.
And the whole Breen thing was just like, I don't care. Like you said, you're talking about... almost like Rebel Moon characters, right? I just don't care, right?
Yeah, I mean, I get what they're going for. Obviously, they're trying to make these two as, you know, lovers in a dangerous time. They're trying to make them...
Well, they're paralleling them, Book and Michael Burnham.
Yeah, and they're trying to make them empathetic around. Villains so that we're not just having this sort of like two-dimensional, you know, we're bad because we want money, mm-hmm. you know, kind of characters. I get what they're going for. It was a little...
But it really softens Locke, in my opinion, right? Like, it, you know...
But I don't think that's a bad thing. I think Locke
he's a misunderstood kid raised by, you know, a neglected uncle, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Gee shucks, you know.
I think he was supposed to be that all along. He's always been, I think, even through the first five episodes, and it's been a little more reticent, whereas Maul is like, I'll do anything for you. He's like, I just want to be with you.
Yeah, I guess. Yes. All right.
Yeah. Best pew 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 for this one. I had the Burnham versus Locke fight, specifically the one where the two of them are sort of going toe to toe, just because mm-hmm. there was some pretty good stunt work in that one. You know, she flips her, you know, she does the high kick to him, flips him over the table, stuff like that. I just thought the stunt choreography was really good. Although I found myself
when you compare that to the 60s version of the you know, where they had the actor who didn't look anything like the body shape of the person tossing around and the bad wigs and stuff. Yeah. Just
But speaking of hair, I did find myself sitting there. My wife joined me for this week's episode and was watching it. And I found myself saying out loud, you know, she looks so beautiful with that great long hair. But man, is that impractical for going in. Like, at least you'd think if she was going to something where they might encounter bad guys, she would tie it back. Because that just was chaotic.
Yeah, I mean, like, Heinlein's always maintained in his sci-fis that, you know, that's if somebody has a ponytail, that's just a handle, right?
Well, that's National Football League rules, right, Jaime?
You're not allowed to grab somebody's hair.
You are. If anything that sticks mm-hmm. past the helmet line, wasn't it one of the Seahawks that got their hair ripped out one year?
You got a dread pulled out.
It got a dread pulled right out of the back of their head.
Yeah. I guess if it was good, you know, a little bit more practical, like one character from season two of Invincible, where there's like a blade or blades in there, and turned it into a whipping weapon.
Any other pew pews that caught your eyes?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
There wasn't like a ton of traditional pew pew pew.
I mean, the hologram thing when they first came in, when there was like all the different shots coming at them, but that it was a typical Star Trek scene. It was very chaotic, right? There's just blasts going everywhere, and you can't tell who's who. It wasn't as good as the fight, I thought.
No, for sure.
Right.
No, the fighting between Michael and Locke definitely was entertaining.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. For the Easter eggs, yes. I thought this was a nice callback to a previous episode. So they are trying to figure out, of course, the big sort of ta-da of this episode is the ISS Enterprise, which of course is, you know, something that would, you know, be pretty recognizable. And they're trying to figure out, well, how did it end up here sort of between worlds and you know, what's the story? And it turns out that the mirror version of Saru, which we saw back in season, I want to say two, that mirror Saru, who was saved by Prime Burnham, our Burnham, when she was in the alternate universe, actually got a bunch of the rebels together. They took the Enterprise and they were trying to escape to the Prime universe. And it sounds like that's what happened, is they basically escaped from becoming... Sushi, what was it? Sarushi? And ended up in the Prime Universe. And that's how one of the people that was from the Mirror Universe was actually part of this group of scientists that have been hiding the Progenitor's tech. And that's how they knew to go hide this thing in there. They knew that this wormhole was there, and they knew that this version of the Enterprise was stuck in this space. So,
in season two, was it the Enterprise or was it Discovery in a mirror that Emperor Giorgio was flying around on?
It was Discovery, although the Enterprise still existed in that universe, I guess.
No, I know, because there's the Kirk and Spock, the original series mirror.
Yeah.
The first mirror universe episode, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So that was a pretty good callback to sort of, again, close the loop on that sort of piece of storyline, especially because they made a point of saying when they got into the future that the mirror universe doesn't really exist for them anymore. They can't. There's no way to go back and forth. And so this was a nice little bow on. The show had gone pretty deep into the mirror universe, especially with the Emperor Giorgio character and everything. It was nice to have a little closure on that front.
And then she mentions Spock Station when
she does, yeah. Burnham,
yeah. And it's funny how she just goes and naturally sits in the captain's chair. Like, aren't you going to, like, help, you know?
Well, that's where she brought Book.
He'll do all the work.
The other one that I saw was at the end of the episode when Tilly and Culber are at the bar. They're having their conversation, and they pull back out, and there's Lurian sitting at the end of the bar.
Morn!
Yeah, definitely. As soon as I saw it, I'm sure you both had the same reaction. I just said, Morn!
I actually reversed it and went back, and was that really Morn?
It's impossible to know. We don't know anything about the lifespan of Lurians, but that, yeah, again, just the way that he's sitting at the end of the bar, sort of dead-faced, staring off into the distance.
Looking at his drink.
To me, immediately, it was a really fun sort of, again. So
for me, the fact that they used yellow alert and red alert are kind of like Easter eggs, because they've always said black alert, which I've never really, that's when they're doing their mycelial jumps, mm-hmm. right? But spore jumps or whatever. But I mean, I thought it was interesting that Rainer
yeah.
said yellow alert, and then, because, you know, they had different degrees of alerts that they had back in the original series that, you know, this, for some reason, they just don't use on this episode, on this series.
Yeah. The part where he's trying to sort of brainstorm the best idea wins part with the whoever gets it wins a jug of citrus smash was pretty funny too, where, you know, he's trying to learn how to play nicely with the other kids. That was pretty funny. And Linus sitting at the piano bar playing jazz was also a nice, like, again, not really an Easter egg, but just I like that they just keep exploring this character in very subtle ways in the background. He's just so much fun.
Yeah.
I would have liked a little more backstory on the Breen. I feel like the Breen have been a character for a long time. Obviously, they played a pretty big role in DS9, but they, you know, they sort of do the whole thing where you see them in their sort of more gelatinous state, and then you see them in their sort of more solid state, and then you see them in their uniforms. But they don't really give you a lot of background on, like, why they're big and bad. Like, they're kind of leaning on your Trek knowledge. I feel like for a series like Discovery, where the idea, at least, is that you're bringing in a newer audience, or an audience that doesn't need to have all the background, I feel like you could have used a little more understanding of why the Breen are a big bad, what their deal is.
Oh, they did call him Action Saru. You forgot to mention that too.
Oh, yes.
Action Saru in any universe.
Action Saru, yes. Yeah. So I don't know about you, but the tractor beam scene pulling the Enterprise out of the wormhole was a little bit like a forceps birth.
They don't do that anymore, do they?
No, they don't. But I'm pretty sure I was a forceps birth, but, you know, like, because that's kind of how they did it back then. Around the time that I was born. Mm-hmm. Yeah, or brought into this world, as it were. Mm. With a tractor beam.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pulling me out of a wormhole.
Yeah. Any other Easter eggs, Jaime?
Easter eggs? I mean, they touched on some stuff. You got the bigger one of the, you know, for practical budget reasons, the ISS Enterprise. They mentioned, they name check Osira.
Yep.
As a concern from the Emerald Chain. And I'm going to throw in that, you know, Mirror Spock, so the mirror version of Michael's brother, wasn't so ruthless after all as you all talked about the first one. And it sort of ends with, like, oh, him recognizing that their Terran Empire isn't so great. This does, we do see in Deep Space Nine, this does lead to the downfall of the Terran Empire as they do reforms and get pummeled by the Klingon-Cardassian alliance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Michael was way closer to the right answer than she realized.
Yeah.
But I felt like that was an intentional callback.
Yeah. Yeah. some good quotes in this episode. When Burnham and Book go through the wormhole the first time, and there's, you know, they're dodging debris from the second they go through, she says, "Debris is not a good sign." I think I might have that tattooed on me somewhere. Debris is not a good sign.
Yeah.
When Rayner is trying to get Stamets to cut to the chase, he says, "I don't need to know how the cake is boiled, Commander." Yeah. You boil your cake. Don't knock until you tried it. Burnham very poignantly, "Love is a powerful thing. Do not let it take you down the wrong road." And that, of course, is a truism from her own experiences, right? Mm-hmm. When she's talking to Maul and Locke. Change is hard, but it can also be freeing, from Tilly. That was very sage. I thought when she's talking to Culber, I will say that if I had a knock against this episode, and I don't mind the backstory love stuff as much as you do, Tim, but they kind of shoehorned the Culber Tilly stuff into this one a little bit. Like, we knew.
I didn't get why is he anxious. Like, I'm not so sure it's what
his experience after being
being the host dude?
For the Trill.
Yeah.
Seemed to have sort of wakened something in him just about his sort of existentialism and stuff like that.
Oh, because obviously. Yeah, he died and came back or something.
Yeah, because he died in season two and came back in season three, or died in season one and came back in season two. So again, I think that there's something worth exploring there, and I like those two actors, and I think that there's something to do there, but they literally do like 90 seconds of them at the beginning of the episode and another like maybe 120 seconds at the end of the episode. I'm like, if you're going to do that, at least do it in the next episode. Like, that just felt shoehorned, and it doesn't, I think, give real merit to how kind Tilly is or how emotional, in spite of himself, Culber is. I just felt like it wasn't doing a great service to those characters.
And it didn't advance the story either, right? So,
I will say, the one thing I have loved about Discovery over its 5-year run is they have built up characters having emotional conflicts, problems. Like, they've done a good job of not just being like, well, last week's episode, they had this traumatic event, and the next week, they're fine. They've actually carried those things forward really, really, really well. And so we saw last week's episode that Culber was clearly having a tough time with some of this stuff. And they carried it forward, but they didn't carry forward in a very satisfying way. So,
right. I mean, so the other thing too, like the Detmer character missing from the bridge was to me an obvious thing too, right? And then they kind of explain it away with Detmer and Wushku are going to be taking the Enterprise back to Federation space to put it in the museum or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But I mean, Wushku was in the episode because she was giving her opinion at one point. So does that mean those two actresses are not on any of the subsequent episodes coming up?
It may be that they're off for a few episodes. Maybe they were working on a different project, or maybe they only had them for a certain number of episodes under contract, or who knows, right?
Well, I mean, you know, yeah, did we know, or did everybody know that this was the final season up until like maybe 6 months or a year ago?
I think they knew going in. I think the performers.
I thought typically it was 7 years was a Star Trek contract.
No, I think that's an old standard. I don't think I think they were more shorter term now, because I don't think there's really any guarantees in the streaming world. I don't think they give out 7-year contracts to anybody for anything anymore.
Right.
As much as obviously, you know, it's good to secure their, you know, put options on their contracts and stuff like that that you can pick up. It's also, it can become pretty prohibitively expensive if you try and have people under contract for that long. You gotta pay for that, right? I mean, think about some of the performers in, you know, this show, obviously a little less so, but in some of these shows, you know, like, people have other careers. I mean, you know, Jess Bush is becoming a bit of a star in her own right, coming out of Strange New Worlds. You know, there's already talk that she might, you know, opt out and then, you know, whatever, come back for special appearances or whatever. They're going to look for ways to try and keep these people under shorter term contracts. But again, we now know that Lower Decks is coming to an end after 5 seasons, and, you know, this is coming to an end after 5 seasons. Picard only lasted 3 seasons. It's conceivable that, you know, now instead of doing 7-year runs on series, that they're going to max out at 5 tops. Mm-hmm. You know, for all we know, I mean, obviously we don't have the books in front of us. For all we know, there is a 5-year deal. Like, that's what they signed. Who knows?
Sure. Well, I mean, that Dr. Blavatsky, she's available, isn't she, looking for a contract?
Yeah, Dr. Pulaski.
Pulaski.
Yeah. I had a big question for this one, and it bothered me in the last episode, and it really bothered me into this episode, where they keep finding these clues, and they're building this thing like an old fashioned G.I. Joe episode. They're building these things that, you know, we go to this far off place and we find this thing, we put them together, and when we have all the pieces, it'll solve this puzzle. They keep it just sitting on the boardroom table. They know, yeah. Like, they know that Maul and Locke have been able to infiltrate the Enterprise and get this time bug on last week's episode that really screwed them over and did all this stuff. They know that this is all, like, super high stakes. They've seen the future. Rayner and Burnham saw the future where the Breen have destroyed the Federation. Maybe put that in a safe, something under a force field. It's literally sitting on the boardroom table in the ready room. Like, that just... I am having a tough time with wrapping my head around it. This thing is, like, so incredibly important.
Yeah.
Maybe just have a guy stand next to it with a phaser. Something.
It should be this series of things, like Get Smart or something. Yeah. Where you have to go through, like, all of these different barriers and et cetera. It's encased in a Faraday cage, which is itself in lead, which is coated in latinum, which is, you know, just like you know, that thing that screwed up transporters. Guess what? We covered it in that too, so it screws up any transportation attempts.
Yeah, it just seemed, when they both talk about, like, the incredible importance of their mission, it seemed to be a bit of an outlier in that conversation, because if it's that important, I mean, even just having it on the ship seems like a bad idea.
Yeah.
At least put it next to Grudge.
I had a couple of questions that are related, since they showed us so much more about the Breen that we've gotten before. So one is around that sort of, I don't know, hardening of the outer skin, if we want to call it that. Is it like a crab molting kind of thing? Because it seemed real clear that it's a thing that they could do, but for maybe cultural reasons, they don't do. And that was something that Locke brought up to his uncle. Like, hey, we can do this thing. Why is it such a problem for us to do? And it did make me wonder if that sort of semi-solid nature of the Breen is, that they were so compatible with Dominion's founders, who are pure shapeshifters, right? Like, feels like a step in between, beyond the you know, just jonesing to take some Alpha Quadrant to land grab.
Yeah, I was just taking a look at Memory Alpha, who of course are a great source for us for finding out all this stuff. So the ones we've seen in the past, and I guess the ones we've seen in this episode that are, like, you know, variations, they call the outfits they wear refrigeration suits, and it's supposed to keep their temperature at a lower level than their surroundings, to be more like their planet. So I wonder if that is, like, when they're colder, they're one way. When they're at, like, room temperature, they're a different way or something. It's not crystal clear to me. Like I said before, I think they could have maybe gotten a little more into what the Breen are. And again, if the uncle's disgusted at Locke for showing the form that he's showing, why? Like, we can read between the lines that that's not cool in their people, but why?
Spinoff series, Star Trek Breen, where they go into that?
I'm in. Maul and Locke, The Lost Adventures, a love story for Tim.
The mid-season plot dump on the main villains, or antagonists, at least.
Maul and Locke. Yeah. Are we done? Is that that's the whole episode?
Now a word from our sponsor.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Now back to the show.
Yeah, I guess so. We can move on to our watch list. What do you got there, homie?
You all covered the, is it what, Transformers 1? What was the name of the
yeah,
the
Transformers
anime
1, yeah.
Yeah, so given it's got the G1 or Generation 1 designs of the Transformers, or at least heavily inspired by that, I've seen this this Dare to be Stupid cover, the Al Yankovic song. By Cybertronic Spree, and that was a song from, believe it or not, the Transformers
the movie,
animated movie. Yeah,
saw it in the theater.
Yeah, it was really weird when it happens, but it did happen. It's canonical.
Yep.
So, in any case, I thought that might be fun because it was on theme for what you all had there.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely. I haven't watched that yet. I'm gonna watch that one. I had a thanks, Tim. I had a a couple things. Oh, I read a book that I've been meaning to read for a while. I had purchased it last year, but I finally sat down and read recently a book called 8 Billion Genies, which I really liked. It is a graphic novel. It was a comic series, 8 issues, that's been collected in a graphic novel form now. So you can read the whole thing in one go. And it is by Charles Soule, who's a very written by Charles Soule. He's a very popular writer now. He's done, you know, big mainstream books like, you know, Daredevil and things like that that people are in. He's been writing a lot of the Star Wars comic books, which of course are in canon, and it's drawn by a guy named Ryan Brown. The plot is essentially that when the population of Earth hits a certain point, all these genies show up on Earth, and they're these little sort of, you know, very colorful, very interestingly illustrated. You know, they don't look like, you know, Aladdin. They look more like, you know, these little sort of transparent space nymphs. They show up, and every single person on Earth gets one wish. And so what the story basically revolves around is, there is a bunch of people in a bar in Michigan, and when the genies show up, the one person uses their wish that nothing that anyone else wishes can impact anybody who's inside the bar. And so it's basically a story of all these people who happen to be in this place at the same time, and what happens to the world when you give 8 billion different people one wish. And it's really, really interesting look at just the complexity of humanity and what people would wish for. And some people want to be a hero, and some people want to be a villain, and some people want, you know, incredible power, and some people want simple things. But the, of course, chaos of it is that these things cancel each other out and ends up just becoming this very, very chaotic, very, 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 very dangerous world that they all live in. And it's a really, really cool story. I highly recommend. I know it's already been optioned. I think they're going to make this into a movie or a television series or something over the next few years. So look forward to that, because if they can do it as well as the book is done, it's definitely going to be worth a watch. But in the meantime, yeah, really, really good read. Really enjoyed it. Very, very solid story. Very creatively illustrated. Very creatively plotted out. But just at its heart, it's really just a story about people and, you know, how we all have these different and yet very similar wishes for ourselves, and how when we all have those things overlap, how chaotic things can get. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. The cool. Other thing that I just wanted to flag was Bad Batch. So yesterday for us was the penultimate episode, the second to the last but one supper of Bad Bitch. And I feel like we're headed into Jaime Lopez Hold My Beer territory here. I just wanted
too much conclusion to do.
I just There's wanted to flag this and see if you guys agreed. I don't know if you watched yesterday's episode yet, but
yeah, I have. Yeah,
this season has been like a real sort of slow burn to get to where they've gotten to as of this last episode, and it feels like they kind of have a lot of stuff to cover in one last theoretically 30-minute episode.
Yeah, that's now that you point that out, that is kind of, because this season has been pretty good. I've really enjoyed the sort of the plots. It's all one big long arc, but yeah, because last year was a bit wishy-washy in some of this.
Yeah, last year was a little more hit and miss, but this one really has been propulsive. It's been like, okay, this, but every episode as we've been counting down, I've been like, oh, okay, so we've only gotten to this far. Okay, well, we've only gotten to this far. And I found myself watching this one thinking like, wow, they still have a lot of stuff to cover and not a lot of time to cover it. So I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there for the two of you as well. I have really enjoyed this whole series. I think it's a really interesting part of the Star Wars universe, exploring, you know, through, you know, again, the Bad Batch themselves, you know, there are times where I can take or leave, but just, you know, the sort of overarching what it's like during the dark times, what it's like at the beginning of the Empire, how bad it's gotten in some of these places has been really interesting. And yeah, to sort of get us to this point after the whole third and final season and have a lot of things to tie up, I don't know. I'm a little worried.
Yep.
Yeah, I see that the 15th episode will be the final one, but it's unclear to me if it's going to be the normal length as all the rest of the episodes, or if it's going to be double length, or if they're going to do a part one and part two and just drop it on the same day.
Yeah.
So it's really unclear to me if it's actually going to be 15 episodes for the season, given that the prior two seasons were 16 episodes each.
Yeah. So maybe it's an hour long and we do get a little bit more of a satisfying conclusion. I hope that's the case.
Maybe. I guess we'll find out, because it's really bizarre to have it like that.
Yeah. The other thing just worth flagging, and we talked about it a few weeks back, but they're going to be doing the new animated series, Tales of the Sith, is coming out on May 4th. So that'll just be a few days after the end of Bad Batch. So that to look forward to. We got another look at, they dropped a little bit of a scene this week on social media where we see General Grievous in his all his glory with his lightsabers whipping around as part of this series. So I'm also really looking forward to that one. So next week will be a good week for Star Wars animation.
Cool. Yep. All right. Well, I guess we'll talk about Rebel Moon, Scargiver. Did you watch Rebel Moon at all, Jaime?
I've not seen either one, but you know, it's one of those ones that now
I got news for you. I got news for you. There's a third one coming.
Really? I thought it was a two-parter.
That's what I thought too, and we talked about it last week.
So yeah, I mean, all I can say is holy plot holes, Batman. But
no, but also forgettable characters. Don't forget that.
Well, I mean, they have this Princess Peach character that they have to go and rescue that they don't rescue by the end of this movie. So you clearly there's another movie coming, right? And I mean, I'm going to save you guys a ton of time if you don't want to watch this. I mean, it's pretty. It blows up really good. I mean, it's amazing, visually stunning. But like we've talked about before, the plots, the story is just not there. And like you said, like last week about it, Jonathan, that you know, I don't care about any of these characters. I mean, yeah. I do care about some of them, but like they don't give you enough reason to do it. And it's kind of like, you know, it's like the villagers taking on, you know, this giant army. They have this huge skirmish, they defeat the army, and then the next wave of the army comes. I mean, so do they not think that they're not going to get spanked in the next movie, like, because they're going to just send a bigger ship? You know, and the scene where, you know, they're on the battle where Grievous and Obi-Wan Kenobi are having the lightsaber battle as the battle cruisers crashing into the earth, like totally stolen from that movie. And then, you know, the scene where the giant Death Star is about to blow up the planet, but they got to blow up the Death Star before it blows up the planet, like completely lifted from A New Hope, right? So, and again, like you just don't care about these people, like. You know, it's the only thing that's missing is R2-D2 and C-3PO, right?
Well, in fairness, they do have
there is a C-3PO in there, and it's voiced by
Sir Anthony.
Sir Anthony, yeah, Tony. What else is Anthony? He says, Yeah, I mean, that's kind of an interesting thing, because like, and he sort of, and you know, and the whole sort of like Palpatine comes back from the dead kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, enough already, right? So, but like I said, it is very, it's a very pretty movie, but, and it would be great to see it in a theater, like in terms of like the visual spectacle of it all. But I guess it's a big popcorn movie, like you guys have always said before, like, you know, you just
check your brain at the door.
And just go eat the popcorn and enjoy the movie, right? So because it could be so good. The amount of money and technology they put into making it look amazing, but yeah, it's just like, you know, it ain't like a Ridley Scott Aliens, and it doesn't have a compelling enough story to really care about it, right? So and didn't you say that this was supposed to be like his Star Wars or something like that? He was doing
He pitched this to Disney/Lucasfilms as his take on a Star Wars story, and they were like, thank you, no thank you. And he was like, fine, I'm gonna go make it anyways. So essentially they wrote a Star Wars story and then took the Star Wars out of it. But not
He didn't take enough out.
No, well, I haven't watched it yet. I sat down just the other night. I sat down and I was like, I need to watch something. What should I watch? And I was like, should I just watch that? I'm like,
I think American Island was probably on at the same time. You probably could have watched that.
I in the end, I watched something else. I just could not bring myself to turn it on. I will, I'm sure, eventually watch it. I thought there was some things to take away from the first one that were good. I thought that there was some good stuff in there. But more than anything, it's exact same problem Zack Snyder had all along. Somebody make this person make other people's scripts. Like, do not let him write movies. He's not a good writer. He's an incredible visual filmmaker. He's a terrible writer.
Yeah. So, I mean, is it worth a watch? Yes, it's worth a watch. But is it like, are you going to be really amazed by it? No, I don't think so. Yeah. And yeah, maybe you do what Jaime's talking about doing. Wait for the third one and just sit down and watch all three at the same time.
I don't know. If you turn your brain off for that long, I'm not sure you can turn it back on again.
We all watched Justice League, didn't we?
I don't remember. I think I've lost that part of my brain function.
Yeah, I get confused between... I actually almost wanted to go back and watch the first Justice League just to see what the differences were. But
oh, it's pretty dramatic. I do remember that.
You mean the differences or the original?
Oh, the differences, like the difference between what he had sort of intended versus what version we saw of the original when they released it with the finish by Joss Whedon and everything. That was not good.
Oh, Joss Whedon finished it. Okay. Yeah,
it made no sense. Like the one that they actually released in the theaters originally, it made no sense. It just completely ignored major plot developments and changed it, like, they took out the main villain. Like, it made no sense. It made no sense at all.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I guess that's it for another week. So, hey, Jonathan, if people can touch with you, wherever they find you.
You can find me on the Twitter and the Instagram as @JPKNews or on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
And Jaime, people in touch with you, wherever they find you.
I'm on Twitter as @DevOfTheHair.
Twitter. Still with the Twitter.
People still recognize the name.
You know, it's funny. I interviewed somebody the other day, and it's going to come out on the weekend, but he said that he's still on Twitter because he likes people, and that's where people are, right? So I think that's part of the reason why I'm still on Twitter and all that stuff. But yeah, my name is Timitra, TimMitra on the Twitter machine, the X machine, the Instagram machine, the Mastodon machine, most of the machines. That's where you find me. So until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
with the gap we had there. I think the advertising mechanism on our podcast host is kind of turned off.
Oh, so I heard one not the last episode, but the one before that. I heard.
Did you hear one?
I heard a commercial right off the top. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I didn't. Not this last episode. I didn't get.
Yeah,
one.
I didn't get one the last episode, but I got one the one before that.
Where we came back, we were back. That one.
It was either that one or the because we this was this is the fifth one we just recorded. So I think it was the third episode I heard a commercial for.
I even put the stinger in the middle with Mike and to take you into the commercial and take you out of it. And somebody mentioned before that they didn't hear a commercial. I remember. I think it was Dave Price. Maybe mentioned it. Hmm. But I wonder if it's like the timing in terms of when you start to download it. But yeah, our numbers are down because, I mean, not that our episodes are down, but I think we had a couple of episodes that put us up into the, for some reason, put us up into the range where they get excited, you know?
Well, we did take a pretty long hiatus there.
Wasn't our fault.
No, it, we'll have to think about that as we sort of continue working through this season, if there's other things we want to do, because the hiatus between this and what's next could be substantial. The next thing will probably be Lower Decks that usually comes back in August. So it will probably be another couple month break in between. But we'll have to decide if there's other things we want to do, like Doctor Who's coming up. And the Doctor Who's actually not a bad jumping on point because they're kind of treating it as a soft reboot, right? Like they're kind of saying this is like welcome aboard new viewers on this one. So, and that's only, 3 weeks away.
Yeah.
Decide whether or not we want to do our thing with it or just talk about it.
There was a trailer actually this week of Doctor Who. I'm surprised not one of us didn't pick it up.
Yeah.
The new doc.
Yeah, the trailers have been kind of dropping with a little bit less fanfare for some reason. For example, I just happened to see that there is a third season of Mayor of Kingstown coming out, starring Jeremy Renner.
Oh.
He's back. It's fine.
Well, what with him living and everything?
That's nuts. Yeah. That he can come back from that, though.
Yeah. Good, though. I mean, good for him. I'm glad. I'm glad he's still in our lives. I'm glad he's still alive.
Yeah. And decided that he wanted to still do what he does instead of just, hanging it up and saying, all right, I'm just going to peace out on this one.
Yeah. Yep. How many, do anything fun for your birthday?
It was nicer weather on Tuesday, so we went to eat at a restaurant outdoors in a cafe, enjoy the sun and breeze. Brought the dog with us, and he could just kind of enjoy the sun and breeze, too, while we ate.
Nice.
The rest of this week has been cold and rainy.
Mm. Or, as we like to call it, Seattle.
Yeah. This season has been kind of nuts, though. Can't decide if it's, warm and sunny, or, sunny and windy, or windy and rainy. It's just all over the place. It makes it really challenging to decide how to dress and it's confusing the heck out of the plants, which
makes them
just like explode with pollen everywhere. It's been awful for my allergies.
Yeah.
Is it cold where you are now, Jaime, or colder than?
Let me see the temperature.
I mean, last couple of days.
Oh yeah, it's been in the 50s in Fahrenheit.
Yeah. Yeah, because today it was cold. It was like almost wintry cold.
Yeah, but so by this weekend it's supposed Celsius. To be 25 Celsius.
Yeah, I mean,
like 2 days later, we're going to go from I think overnight tonight, it's supposed to be, down near zero. And then, like a day and a half later, it's supposed to be that again. Like, oh, Lord.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
It's a typical Southern Ontario spring for sure.
No, I don't think it's typical at all.
Yeah. I don't know. It feels like this is where we've been going the last few years. These sort of weirdly unpredictable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole sort of craziness.
Yup. Oh,
I'm in the wrong folder.
All right. Talk to you next week, guys.
Okay. Ciao.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.